Let's focus on Philadelphia, which saw apparently the greatest increase in something called income segregation. And this study looks at a period from 1970 to 2007. For purposes of definition, what is income segregation?
So income segregation is the extent to which families at different levels of income live in the same neighborhood. So we are really looking to see how likely is it that a high-income family lives with middle-class neighbors, or middle-class families live with poor and affluent neighbors, and so on. And we found that in 1970, most neighborhoods were pretty mixed income. That is, there were very few sort of extremely high-income neighborhoods or extremely low-income neighborhoods in most metropolitan areas, and that changed dramatically over the last 40 years. So now we have a lot fewer of these mixed income kind of middle class neighborhoods and a lot more of the very poor or very affluent neighborhoods.
But what are some of the factors that compelled Philadelphia to undergo such a radical shift over that time?
One thing that affected a lot of metropolitan areas over this time was rising income inequality, so that as the middle class shrank and there were more either high income families or low income families, that led to more kind of high and low income neighborhoods. Another thing that affected a lot of metropolitan areas was sort of different booms in the housing market. And so as the housing market booms in some places, it starts to price middle class families out of certain neighborhoods, and then only more affluent families can afford to move in. And so those neighborhoods sort of turn and become overwhelmingly affluent. Conversely, neighborhoods that might be mixed income, as some middle-class families move out, housing prices decline. That makes more people move out, and it makes it more possible for working-class families to move in. And so those neighborhoods then sort of become more concentrated poverty neighborhoods. So it's partly housing market dynamics and partly rising income inequality is the story in a lot of places.
Let's look now at the potential impact on this trend, though, of income segregation. First off, what does it mean when you have different neighborhoods based on income? There isn't that much of a mix anymore.
That's right. There's fewer and fewer mixed-income neighborhoods, and that means we sort of increasingly live in a society that's, you could characterize as sort of there being two Americas rather than one. There's an America where the poor live and an America where the upper-income folks live, and they don't connect very often. They don't see each other, and I think that erodes public trust. It erodes the willingness of people to sort of invest in public goods and common resources and things like that. Another problem that may arise from this is increasing sort of political polarization. So if a representative, a state representative, or a federal congressperson represents a mixed income community, you would expect them to sort of want to represent the broad range of interests of people in that community. But if they start to represent only high income communities or only low income communities, then we're going to get some representatives with one set of interests that they represent and others with another set of interests they represent, and that's going to potentially lead to greater sort of partisanship and polarization in politics, which I think we've seen a lot of.
It sounds like a cycle that once started is hard to break out of.
I think that's right. I mean, it sort of feeds on itself. As income inequality grows and income segregation grows, and political polarization grows, and so, and then it gets harder and harder, I think, for the country to sort of come together in sort of shared ways.
As a professor of education, let's also look at the impact on children and their opportunities for education and college.
Yeah, well, one of the other things we found in a different but related study was that if you look at the achievement gap on test scores between high and low-income children, that gap has grown about 40% over the last three decades. And at the same time, the achievement gap between, say, blacks and whites declined over the last 50 years. So now the gap between the rich and the poor on standardized test scores is bigger than the gap between black and white students. And so this sort of income disparity, we're seeing it play out in kind of educational disparities as well.
Now, again, this is a long-term study from 1970 to 2007, though we are still trying to climb out of a recession. To what extent were these trends exacerbated in the past few years?
So because of the timing of the availability of the census data we use, we can only really look to see what happens up till about 2007, which, as you know, is sort of just before the housing market collapse and the recession begins. And so what we're seeing in the data we've looked at so far is kind of what happened right up until the recession started. In the next few years, as the census releases the data from the last couple years, we'll be able to sort of figure out what impact the recession has had on this. I suspect, as a lot of working and middle class families have lost their jobs and lost their houses, we're going to see a lot of movement in some metropolitan areas of families, both in terms of the income distribution and in terms of where people live. But we don't have the data yet to really characterize that.
In a sense, are we actually returning to a time before the surge in the middle class?
Yeah, we are. I mean, if you look at some measures of income inequality that we have back to the beginning of the 20th century, income inequality was very high in the 1920s and even into the 1930s. And then it dropped a lot after World War II. Partly the economy was restructured. And so income inequality was very low in the U.S. by historical standards from, say, 1945 until 1970. And now, in the last 40 years, it's climbed steadily and now is as high or higher than it was in the 1920s and the 1930s, at the time of the Depression.
Do you have cause for optimism that this trend can be abated or reversed in the future?
Well, it's going to take a lot of work on a lot of fronts, I think, because we need policies that act to reverse some of the growth in income inequality, and we don't seem to have the kind of political will for that. But I think what you've seen in the last few months is an increasing sense of concern about the levels of income inequality and the consequences that that has for everyone in society. The Occupy movement is a very vocal example of that, but there's a lot of people, I think, who are concerned about rising income inequality and disparities in society. And so I think the fact that a lot of people are concerned about it and we're starting to hear a lot more about it makes me somewhat optimistic that we'll find the political will to solve it.
Professor Reardon, thank you so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Dave, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Stanford University education and sociology professor Sean Reardon.